Welcome, everybody. This is John Holbrook inviting you to another session of Walter O'Keefe's Americana. Walter O'Keefe has been a fixture in the entertainment world for many years, and naturally his activities have brought him into contact with people in all walks of life. As a member of the Authors Club in town here, Mr. O'Keefe has come in contact with some of the leading scribblers of the literary world. And today, his guest is a gentleman who enjoys a lofty position in the world of letters. The author of the bestsellers, The Walls of Jericho, The Iron Mistress, Comanchero, Mr. Paul Wellman. Later on in the program, you will visit Mr. Wellman's home in Beverly Hills. But here's Walter first, anxious to get a few things off his mind. Okay, Walter, take over.
You know, ladies and gentlemen, that was a very gracious and generous introduction that John gave me. I consider it a bit misleading, however. You people might come to the conclusion that I, as a member of the Authors Club, am knocking off bestsellers under another name. But believe me, that's not true. The last piece of fiction I wrote was my income tax report last spring, and Uncle Sam just sent that back for revision. As a matter of fact, I was invited by Rupert Hughes, the president of the Authors Club, to come over one day at luncheon and say a few words to them, along with some other speakers. I guess my claim on authorship would have to rest on a few not-so-popular songs I tried to write. To prove to you how unsuccessfully I can write a song, let me bring up the melancholy item of a song I wrote 2 years ago entitled When the Sun Goes Down. Now, I can't say I didn't get the breaks on the song, because as a matter of fact, it was recorded by both Bing Crosby and Frank Sinatra with the Modern Airs. The sheet music was published, and I thought to myself, brother, here's where I make enough money to buy a house in Beverly Hills or a steak at Mike Romanoff's. Well, that song was a bigger disappointment to me than Native Dancer was in the Derby. You know, when you write a song, it's customary for you to receive from your publisher twice a year a report of your earnings for the previous 6 months. Well, I didn't get a report of the earnings. This time, the publisher sent me a bill for printing. Now, speaking at the Authors Club luncheon was what an actor calls doing a benefit. And benefits encompass all sorts of affairs and activities. It can be a charity affair, it can be a community affair, political affair, some club of your friends, neighbors, town. You don't get paid for these things in money, but you certainly get a sense of satisfaction sometimes. Believe me, it's a great privilege and a great thrill to go to hospitals or army camps, for example. And yet one of the benefits that stands out most vividly in my memory is something that happened to me a few months ago in the Hawaiian Islands. I was out there on my vacation. I was reading a book one afternoon when the phone rang. The gentleman said, Mr. O'Keefe, this is Lawrence Judge speaking. Let me fill you in on my background. I was Governor General of the Islands during the administration of Herbert Hoover. I knew then that Mr. Judge was not a youngster, and when I met him later, he turned out to be a very gay, gallant, generous gentleman. Over the phone, he said to me, you know, Mr. O'Keefe, for years, I have devoted a great deal of my time to the care and entertainment of the leper colony on Molokai. The people in your business have been very generous to me in the past. When I've asked them for favors, Irving Berlin, Shirley Temple, Olson and Johnson, Art Linkletter, have been good enough to take time off on their Honolulu vacations to fly over and entertain the lepers. I was wondering if you'd fly over with me someday. I guess the simplest way to describe Molokai, for those of you who have not been there, is to say that it's a big rock in the Pacific Ocean, less than an hour by air from Honolulu. The cliffs rise very high, but there's a little peninsula, very green and flat, for the airport. It looks like a par five on a golf course. We were taken through the colony. We saw the little bungalows where the patients live. After lunch, we were taken to the little recreation hall, where they show the moving pictures 3 times a week, and there were about 220 patients there. Now, I'd like to digress for a moment here. It's got a point. Some years ago, I was talking to a very famous Broadway comedian. I ran into him in Chicago, and being a confirmed New Yorker, this guy, the great comedian, said to me, Walter, believe me, when you leave Manhattan and get across the Hudson River, you're in the sticks. Now, you have to excuse a poor man, because New Yorkers are like that. They're sort of like East Coast versions of Texans. In that time, I was young enough and naive enough to believe that you were in the sticks once you left New York. But believe me, over the years, I've learned a lot better. In the realm of comedy, radio, television, and moving pictures have made the farmer, the miner, the rancher, the cowboy just as sharp as those guys on Broadway who think they know it all. For 45 minutes, I told them jokes and gags, same things I would have told on Broadway or in Hollywood or in Chicago. And at the conclusion, I asked, are there any questions? Somebody in the rear hollered out, tell us about your two boys, Michael and Anthony. And you know, it was then I realized that even by remote control, I had become a small part of their life on Molokai. I came away from the experience with a great feeling of humility, because I have never, and I say this sincerely and honestly, I have never seen a happier group of people. Somehow or other, they have made their deal with God and with life, and in that they have found serenity and happiness. Believe me, that's one benefit I hope to play every time I return to Honolulu. And so I say benefits have their rather unique rewards. Maybe if I hadn't gone to the Office Club that day when Rupert Hughes invited me, I wouldn't have met our next guest, Paul Wellman. So now, ladies and gentlemen, let's jump into my personal flying saucer, and I'll take you out to the Beverly Hills home of this distinguished author. At this point, I see John Holbrook ready to say a few winged words.
Another feature we would like to clarify as regards Walter O'Keefe's Americana is this. The program is mobile. If, for instance, Mr. O'Keefe had been running this program when he was in Honolulu some months ago, he might have had interesting interviews with Gary Cooper and Burt Lancaster en route to the Polynesian Islands for picture making. Or he might have talked to Mickey Rooney when he flew into the islands en route home from Korea. The same opportunity lies ahead in O'Keefe's travels to camps or hospitals or to entertain troops abroad, as he has done in the past. Mr. O'Keefe was on the staff of Wendell Willkie and did 45,000 miles with a presidential candidate, both on the campaign train and plane. And so he has a wide circle of acquaintance in the newspaper and political world, which could be interestingly capitalized, for example, on a trip to Washington. The aim of this program is to be entertaining at all times. And Mr. O'Keefe has been around too long to fall into the error of any controversial subject matter. Let's pick it up again now as Walter takes you to visit the home of our guest for today.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the new electronic age in show business, where I, delivering my product to your home, have gone to the home of another gentleman to pick up the product for the day, and I am now in the lovely living room of a very, very successful American author. It's very quiet here. It's a great place for a contemplative man. It's a good place for him to write his books. And I am happy to present, across the table from me, my friend Paul Wellman. Paul, we're delighted to have you with us today.
Thank you very much, Walter. And my friend goes two ways.
All right, Paul. You know, I think if the listeners would be interested, in as much as your books have sold so heavily and so spectacularly, in knowing which was the biggest seller you did have.
My biggest seller was the Walter Jericho. It sold about 1.25 million copies.
Gee, that must be a tremendous thrill.
Well, it's pretty good for the pocketbook, too.
Yes, and may I ask you this, Paul? In the case of the Walls of Jericho, was that translated in many other languages?
It's been translated now in 9 other languages besides English.
Are these this side of the Iron Curtain, or are you published there, too?
Well, I was published back of the Iron Curtain. The Russians pirated the book. I have never yet been able to even get a copy, let alone a royalty from it.
I think we should take it up with the United Nations. Now, tell me this. On the case of the domestic arrangements, when you're right, I know the women who listen would like to know. Now, I was down at Balboa a few weeks ago, and I met Virgil Potts, that gorgeous cartoonist with those crazy things.
What a wonderful.
Aren't they wonderful? He gave me one for my kid's bedroom, for Anthony's bedroom.
It caused him to have nightmares.
No, the kid loves them.
They're not for the tender young.
This one was all right for him. But may I ask you this? Potts' wife acts as a sort of a secretary and filter and an iron curtain between him and the world and people he wants to get away from. What happens with the woman?
That's the truth of the Wellmans. Mrs. Wellman dominates the downstairs. I have my study upstairs, and when I'm working, nobody sees it.
Nobody sees it.
No.
Now, may I ask you this? Is there a collaboration in this writing? Do you consider with Mrs. W.?
Oh, with Mrs. Wellman, yes, indeed. She reads everything, and she's very, very sharp in her criticism. In particular, when I'm writing about a woman.
Mm-hmm.
I ask for her opinions, and she's always correct about it.
You mean the motivation of a woman in a certain dramatic situation?
She will tell me whether I'm right or wrong.
Does she ever help you with the motivation on these things?
Indeed, she does.
Mm-hmm.
Tremendously.
How long have you been interested in women, Mr. Wellman?
Ever since I grew up.
Well, you know, I was before I grew up.
Well, I was interested in a sort of a way. My attitude towards women in those days was that they were the ones that fried pancakes and made the bed and so forth. But there was other qualities that interested me later on. And still do.
Well, they're very praiseworthy.
Now, I'll tell you an interesting thing about Mrs. Wellman. She was a lady of the most exemplary virtues and habits. She never did an improper thing except maybe smoke cigarettes or things.
Mm-hmm.
She likes a good story. It's like any modern woman.
An enlightened woman.
But I will sit down and talk to her about women of the most abject type, and she will tell me just exactly what these women would do under a given set of circumstances.
Well, that's very helpful. Now, let me ask, on the subject of women, you're certainly coming up with a new book.
Well, I was bringing that up.
That's what I want to get to.
My next book, which will be published on October the 8th.
October the 8th.
Is entitled The Female.
Well, that's a simple and direct title. It's commercial.
Well, I think it's commercial, and I've had a few people who said, oh, you shouldn't use that word. I don't know why you shouldn't use it. What's wrong about being a female or a male or a human being? It's one of the irreducible facts of life.
Irreducible. I'm still with you.
This woman, about whom I'm writing, is Theodora, who was the Empress of Constantinople in the 6th century, the greatest courtesan in the history of the world.
That's covering an awful lot of territory, my friend.
It certainly is, and I'm saying it with all seriousness. This woman was so great that she not only was supreme in her own field, but she stepped out of the field, left it behind her, and became the Empress of the Known World.
She was... Well, the Empress of the Known World in that era was...
The Empress of the Roman Empire.
The Roman Empire.
She was the supreme boss of the Roman Empire.
Who was she married to?
Justinian the Great.
Ah?
Justinian the Great became called Justinian the Great because of Theodora.
Why?
She was the one who motivated all those notable things that she did.
Mm-hmm.
Theodora was not only beautiful, but she was a very bright girl, and she was never forgetful of the fact that she was a woman. This was the source of her strength.
And she came from the dregs of humanity?
The lowest possible.
Right. And rose to the top.
Probably the greatest step upward a human being of any kind ever made.
Mm-hmm.
That she rose from the lowest to the very highest.
Mm-hmm.
No man could rise as high as she did.
Well, as I recall it, this was the era when the Roman Empire was flourishing.
This was the last brilliant flare of the Roman Empire. When she died... The Roman Empire ceased to exist as such when the Dark Ages began.
Mm-hmm. May I ask you this? In this writing, and I can see some of the rewards of it as my eyes wander around the room, I see a lovely Cezanne. Where'd you pick that up?
Curiously enough, I picked it up in Pasadena.
Well, there are a lot of old things that you can pick up in Pasadena that are priced very worthy.
Perhaps so.
I've lived over there for years, and my favorite line about Pasadena is the fact that we have much reason to be proud because we gave the world the big eye, the 200-inch telescope.
Yes.
And they've got it up in the top of Mount Palomar and started a silly idea. They've got it trained up on Mars to see if there's any kind of life there. It's a crazy idea because if there have been any human beings up on Mars, long before this, they'd have been down to Washington to borrow money from the United States government. So we're hunked on Pasadena. Well, Paul, my dear Mr. Wellman, I certainly wish you good luck with the female, Theodora, the incomparable lady. I hope it sells more than any other book you've ever had. I am grateful for you inviting us all into your home. Thank you very much, Paul.
Well, it's always the greatest pleasure in the world to talk to you.
Thank you very much.
There you have another example, gentlemen, of the type of guest to be expected on Walter O'Keefe's Americana. It might well have been Lin Yutang, the Chinese philosopher. It might have been Eddie Rickenbacker. It might have been Sinclair Weeks, our present Secretary of Commerce. Or it might have been the lovely Ann Sheridan talking in behalf of her work in California, where she spends much time and money combating juvenile delinquency. The list is endless, and the variety in the guest list should prove mighty attractive to the listeners, among whom we are trying to build a listening habit. And now... back to Walter.
You know, I have a subject to discuss now. I never did think that one of my kids would be writing material for the old man. But I have to tell you a story about Michael when he was 14. And his mother was sick in the hospital, and Mike proceeded to get some very bum marks in his Latin up at school. Well, I was an old Latin scholar when I went to school, and I got kind of worried, so I went up to talk to his professor, and I met a fellow named McCormick, a very bright, brilliant, dynamic, gifted teacher. I was tickled to death to know that not only Michael, but the other boy, Anthony, was under this fellow's instruction. So we discussed the problem of Mike and his Latin. He'd given some extra time at school. I'd tutor him at home. And we left. We started to ride home, the two boys and I, and I suddenly, on impulse, said, hey, you guys, how about a stag dinner tonight? Kid said, what do you mean? I said, some night we ought to have a stag dinner. It's a dinner where it's all men, just you and McCormick and I. He seems like a nice guy, and your mother's in the hospital. Let's have him over. Oh, they thought that was a swell idea. And then I thought, you with your big mouth, O'Keefe, what do you know about McCormick? Maybe he's got a wife and seven girls and it'll wreck your stag party. I says, Mike, is he a married man? He said, I don't think so, Dad. I'm pretty sure he's a bachelor. Well, I was wondering why this 14-year-old boy was so certain of this. I says, Mike, what makes you think he's a bachelor? He said, well, I'll tell you, Dad. Every morning, he comes to school from a different direction. Well, I guess that winds it up for today, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening. See you tomorrow.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to a new program entitled Walter O'Keefe's Americana. As the weeks go by, we hope that you will come to look upon this as a pleasant diversion in the day's routine. And we invite you to be with us again tomorrow, same time, same station. This is John Holbrook saying goodbye, and thank you for listening.